IBM recently announced its annual 5 in 5 list. It features 5 new innovations that will change our lives in the next 5 years. Now, on the line to discuss this year's 5 is Glenn Whitewick, Director of Research and Development at IBM in Australia. G'day, Glenn.
Hi, Andy. How are you?
Good, thanks. Now, firstly, why does IBM publish this list and how does it come about?
Well, we've been publishing this since 2006, and we do an enormous amount of research development across IBM that has all sorts of interesting impacts. And we thought it was kind of a fun idea to actually think about where some of these things we're thinking about and working on might have an impact in 5 years. So we kind of, you know, come up with this sort of list, and then it kind of helps us articulate and describe, you know, what the impact of some of our research is going to be.
Okay, so let's talk about some of these things that are going to be hopefully changing our lives over the next 5 years. First one here, how people can help save the planet, data tech.
So this was an idea about kind of harnessing the energy and capability of citizens, almost as like scientists. And if you think about it today, all of the devices that we're starting to use, you know, the phones and cars and so on, are increasingly containing lots of different sensors. So if you just think about your average smartphone, you know, they've got gyroscopes in them, accelerometers, proximity sensors, compasses, microphones, cameras. That's a pretty powerful instrument. And as an example of this, one of our researchers in the US built an application for an iPhone called CreekWatch. And with that, with an iPhone and this application, you simply go out. You might have a little stream running past your house. You might take a picture of it. You can put into the application how much water's flowing there. You know, is it still? Is it flowing fast? Is there any rubbish in it? What's the quality of the water? Is the creek empty or whatever? We can then collect all that information back together. And if enough people do that, it actually performs a really useful base of information aggregated together that can be used by the environmental agencies, local governments, you know, in order to sort of monitor the health of waterways. So that was one kind of example. And another one was based on the idea of lots of computers these days have accelerometers in them to, like your laptop, to sense if you might drop your laptop. It'll actually park the hard disk in your laptop so you don't lose your data. Yeah. And we can use that accelerometer and, again, use a network of those computers to actually be kind of like a large seismic monitoring network. So you imagine the earthquake that happened in Christchurch a little while ago. With a network of accelerometers and all the computers, you could rapidly build a view of, you know, where was the maximum impact, where was the damage like to be, and you know, that information could potentially be very useful in sort of emergency response.
So technology and people power in that case?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's talk about transportation, how we might expect that to change over the next few years.
So the idea with I think in transportation, again, comes back to the fact that, you know, the vehicles that we drive and the devices we carry have got have got GPSs in them. Increasingly, we can collect that information in real time and use it to get a lot of detailed knowledge of where traffic jams are and where congestion is. So we did a project, for example, in Stockholm, where we used GPS information from 1,500 taxis and 400 trucks. And we were able to, just based on that information flowing in, compute the average speed on all the major roads, what the commute times would be likely to be from, you know, point A to point B. But then where we think in sort of 5 years is we can integrate that information with, say, the weather, you know, road conditions, data from video cameras, traffic cameras and the like, and we could go beyond just knowing what it's like now to actually predicting it, you know, 15 minutes or 30 minutes in advance with really good accuracy. And then the next step would be to take that information and actually provide notifications back to us in our vehicles of, you know, a congestion ahead and actually direct the traffic around it, because you don't want everybody to kind of turn left because we might just move the jam somewhere else. We'd need to balance that out. So there's this kind of notion of, you know, understanding in real time what's going on, but actually use that to predict what traffic will be and help manage that flow.
And that's realistically something that we'd be quite close to, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're doing that now. We're doing pilot projects in that sort of area, you know, and then thinking about how to sort of scale that up is going to take a little bit of work, but that's certainly stuff we're engaged in right at the moment.
Okay, let's talk about 3D in the next 5 years. I mean, at the moment, 3D is very popular. We've got 3D video games, 3D TV, obviously 3D at the movies. How is it going to affect communications?
Well, we think we could go beyond that and start using 3D holograms. So the idea here is that we could actually project a 3D image of, you know, you or I talking, or we could use it in healthcare and actually have like a 3D rather than something, a 3D TV, which is still a sort of a two-dimensional device, yeah. we'd actually have the image of whatever we were interested in projected onto the desk next to us in 3D. So a really interesting application of that's in healthcare. You know, lots of medical imaging devices are used today to take 2D slices through your body, and then they get computed and reconstructed to a 3D image, but that's still looked at on a 2D screen. You imagine if we had that 3D image of your brain or my heart, and I could kind of look around. I'm a clinician, I'm a doctor, I could be looking inside that. That would enable them to gain a lot more insight into what was actually going on. So that's the sort of innovation that we think is going to happen in the 3D space.
Okay. One that I'm quite interested in is where we're going to go with batteries in the next few years, because, of course, you know, batteries are basically an environmental hazard, but now we're looking at batteries that are going to be lighter, they'll last longer, yeah?
That's correct. So today's batteries, I mean, there's been great advances in batteries, and lithium ion is the technology that's used in batteries in laptops and phones and often in electric vehicles. What we're working on, and there are a number of different, you know, research organisations, and we're kind of part of that community, is using something called lithium air, where we actually use air inside the battery as part of the overall technology. What we think we can achieve with that is getting a factor of 10 times more energy out of a given size of battery. So you imagine if your laptop didn't need to be charged for a whole week, or an electric car that had the same range as a petrol or diesel, you know, powered car today. That's where we think there's some significant advances to be made in the application of new battery technology.
And great environmental impact as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you think if we were able to switch over to electric vehicles and they had the sort of similar range and all the rest of it, you know, there's obviously significant environmental benefits to be gained.
On that note, the fifth of technology here, recycling our energy with our computers, yeah?
Yeah, that's one that we've been doing a lot of work on, and, you know, I think has all sorts of interesting implications. So computers have obviously got a lot more faster, a lot more powerful over the last sort of 30 or 40 years. But a consequence of that is that they continue to generate a lot of heat. And if you look inside most large data centers today, you know, there's banks of air conditioners that are used to cool the machines, and they actually use air to do the cooling, which turns out not to be terribly efficient.
No.
If we could replace air with water, water is 4,000 times more efficient in terms of carrying heat. So what we're doing today is building computers that are water-cooled, and in fact we're going further than that and actually building technology that's sort of like your blood vessels, little capillaries that reach down to very close to the surface of the chips, and they would carry water and carry that water away. And we could heat that from the computer to around 65 Celsius, run it through a heat exchanger, and then that could provide hot water to, you know, heat that building or to offices or businesses nearby. So you could imagine a time in the future where, you know, we might actually co-locate a data center with next door to a hospital that needed constant supply of hot water, or businesses that needed, you know, energy delivered through hot water.
I think there's enough computers at my place to run a hot shower for 20 minutes.
I have the same problem too.
Okay, so you mentioned you've been doing this 5 in 5 list since 2006. Just thinking back to the 70s, where this kind of list might have involved a flying car. Are they on the horizon?
I don't know about flying cars, but in fact, you know, there's always a lot of fun to be had in terms of predicting the future. One of the things I always think about here is, you know, if you go back 10 years and you think about what a smartphone could do today, you know, people were talking about that, and probably most of us had a sort of slightly cynical view, you know, we don't think that would occur, but, you know, I think it's quite remarkable when you look back and see what we've actually been able to deliver, and that's why I think we're, you know, reasonably confident in some of these things we're proposing for the next 5 years.
Yeah, very realistic innovations. It's the 5 in 5 list, and Glenn, where can we find more information on those?
If you go onto the web and type next 5 in 5 and IBM, you would hit a bunch of different information about those and the ones that we've talked about in the past.
Great. Thanks. That's Glenn Whitewick from IBM. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Andy.